That is not.
Yeah, it should be. Do you have working Wi-Fi?
No.
Okay.
There we go.
It's fine.
Yeah. We can go downstairs. And,
Also, okay, I'm going to just, it's on my website, so I'll just grab it from there. Let's try it. And the worst case is I can also just set things up.
With
my machine, but the easiest would be if we can just.
Are you up again for speaking?
Huh? No, I am.
Are you,
up.
Oh, you're,
okay. Yeah, he's up.
But I just need to figure out.
I couldn't figure out how.
Yeah. It turns out it's very easy.
Oh.
It looks complicated.
That's
but it's easy. Yeah. Sorry.
I was about to get to the best part of the presentation.
And time ran out.
Yeah, because I was going to create a namespace, and I was going to unmount the root, and everybody was going to be like, what?
Ooh.
Why is this?
Wait, you can unmount the root?
Yes, it's going to work. That's the best thing about it.
How?
Because since you already had your binary directory mounted, then you can still issue commands. It's a thing about you. It's a different. Yeah.
How the hell do I use the file manager here?
Oh, this is Ubuntu. I'm sorry for you.
Files.
Can I leave this with you? And you can just
Okay. Absolutely.
Just gotta make sure.
What did you do?
It's a very complicated mechanical mechanism.
It is. All right, I figured it out.
Yeah. There we go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Here you go.
Okay, Ari, we're going to have this on your belt, if possible. So it's here?
Yeah. It's a FOSDEM 2026 TGZ.
Can you help me out?
Just hit enter and let's see what it has. It is not on the GFS partition. I put it on the other.
Oh, fat.
Perfect.
Fat.
Do you expect this room to be the one we get the most technical issues?
Possibly. Okay, how do I actually clip this thing? Ah, there we go.
I need to copy it to my submission.
Okay.
Oh. I'm doing.
You've missed in slash and DOS. Yeah. FOSDEM 2026 TGZ. That's it. Just Antara.
So
the second file in the listing, FOSDEM 2026 TGZ.
Uh-huh.
That's the, Okay.
All right, you can handle it?
I guess. Let's see. I'm going to just. Oh.
And it was like mind blowing.
Yes.
CD for FOSDEM.
Well, no, there's
join other boot drivers.
I'm just going to do it. It's just a bunch of text files. It'll be fine. Doesn't matter. What was the font you had?
You can try Lucida.
Okay. Ah, God damn it. Should have used Acme with the Bart flag. Okay. Lib font. I'm sorry, I'm just going to change the font. I don't remember how to know which font I was supposed to use. Which one is Latin 32, right?
Yeah,
there we go. Sorry, this is... There we go. Okay. So, now we're ready to start. I apologize for the amount of time it took, but yeah, so I'm going to be talking about the new file system for Ninefront, GEFS. These slides are basically a variation of a talk I gave a couple of years ago when I initially introduced it. So it used to say the Great Experimental File Shredder as the acronym. It's been upgraded to the Good Enough File System. Is it great? It's good enough. And that's kind of the ethos I went with it. There's a lot of ways that you could optimize this file system, but my goal wasn't to be the most optimal, the most complicated, squeezing out everything. My goal is to be simple and good enough. Okay, so... What? Ah, damn it. Okay, so GEFS. So I'm going to give you a quick summary of the current state of file systems on Ninefront initially. The world today, there are a few file systems that we have. We've got CWFS, the cache worm file system. This is the file system you heard about just now, where that Ken actually wrote as the initial standalone file server that was never that eventually got ported from its own kernel to user space. It has a... what do we do here?
Turn off. We're going to have to turn on again.
Okay, we just have to do the... Cool. I'll do it live. So there's the cache worm file system, which is the old Ken Thompson... file system that was initially there. There's HJFS, which is one that was written for Ninefront as a kind of fairly boring file system, but it's really simple. There is I'm wondering if we have chalk because I can just do the drawing if we. Ah, perfect. Okay, cool. So we're winging it because. Well, did we figure this out? So there's CWFS, there's HJFS, and then there's Fossil, which is the classic Bell Labs file system that you get on the Labs distribution. the labs district, Ninefront got rid of it because it kept crashing and losing data. And then there's CW, or and then recently we've added GEFS, which ships by default. And GEFS still keeps on crashing, losing data, but at least it seems to be getting better. And actually, I've been using it for, I'm joking mostly, I've been using it for a year. I haven't lost data with it yet. Other people have, and we've found and fixed those bugs, added a bunch of testing, which I'll talk about in a bit, and basically made that work. So what I'm going to be doing here is talking about the general structure of the file system, how it works internally, and what the kind of path forward is. So as a quick review, all file systems on Plan 9 are network-based file systems that talk over 9P. 9P is a protocol with, I think it's 13 operations, and most of them don't matter that much. I mean, they matter, but most of them aren't that relevant for the interesting parts. You've got the important ones are read, which has the key message, and the and then the response. Write and its response. Walk and its response. And I think these are really the important, oh, and open. Which basically open is permission checks. You can think of walk as basically taking a what the protocol calls a FID, a file ID, and moving it around. So you start off with a FID when you attach it to the file to the FS. So attach is basically where you start the whole handshake process to authenticate and get a connection to a namespace. So attach, and then walk will basically start. And attach gives back a FID for the root of your file system. Walk, it moves the FID around the file system. So you start with a root for the FID for the root, clone it, and walk to home ORI. And that gives you a new FID that you can use for open, read, write, etc. Okay, so that's the protocol. How do we implement a file system to do this? So the idea behind GEFS is, let's just, email, welcome. we don't have an eraser. Okay.
There's like this what thing here.
Oh. Oh, wait, there is an eraser. All right, that'll do. Oh. I'm learning how to do this on the fly. yeah. Okay. So how do we do this? I'm going to go through the layers one by one and kind of talk through it. So GEFS is basically built in three different layers. You've got the FS layer, which sits on top of the key value layer, which sits on top of the block layer. And all of these just kind of stack nicely. So the file system layer is what takes things like walk and turns them into basically operations on a key value store. The key value store takes these operations and turns into IO on the block and cache layer. So what we end up doing here is, let's take an example of a thank you. Let's take an example file system hierarchy. We have, let's just say, or let's give it a Plan 9 name. And the X file contains right? Okay. So we've got user ori x, which says hello GEFS. How do we map this into a hierarchy? So what we would do is we would put in a key value pair that says, let's give it ID -1, empty name. And that's the root of your file system hierarchy. So at the root of the file system hierarchy, what do you need to do to look up files? You need to know the ID of the root. And the so what I do is I have a map that to, let's say, 1, or, yeah, okay. Sorry, here I would have the permissions. So ID 0 and, I don't know, owned by Ori. File size is whatever. Basically, everything you'd get out of stat goes into the value, packed into a buffer. Now, this file ID here is the ID of the directory. And let's just say I also have user, I don't know, Rob. Because, you know, I always share my computer with Rob. Okay, so I've got, so what I would have in the key value store is a file starting with, two files starting with zero, sorry, one file starting with zero, and name is user, which maps to file ID 1. File ID 1 would have Ori. Ori and Rob. And both of these start with file ID 1 because their parent directory is user with file ID 1. So this is also, this is how you end up getting directories. It's all a flat listing, but you, the prefix of the directory in the flat listing gives you the directory hierarchy. So that means that every file that starts with ID 1 goes into the directory user. Everything with ID 0 goes into the directory slash. So this works inside a key value. This is how you map a tree to a key value store. And then how do you map the data for the file? Let's just say I've got, I'll call this one 2. So in 2, I have a file called x, which has ID 3, right? So what I end up doing is ID 3 offset 0. I get a block ID here, which points to the data on to the block on disk that contains the contents of the file. So even the file blocks go into the key value store, which means that you have to make a pretty fast key value store. Okay, so how do we do the? So that's how we map the hierarchy. Let's talk about key value stores. So the. God damn it, it would be really nice if I could just flip the flip to a new page. Okay.
You might be able to, because the presentation is up.
Cool. I will let you get to...
But we only have half the screen.
Ah, wonderful. Let's see. I'm just going to keep going until you've gotten... flip through the slides and let me know when you get to the right place. Slide plus, same as it. Okay, so the key value store is based on what's called a B epsilon tree. And a B epsilon tree is basically what do you, how many people here are familiar with B trees? Almost everyone, cool. So I'm not going to spend much time on it. I'm going to say that B trees are like binary trees, but fat. So you have a B tree, which has a bunch of, is a node with a bunch of children, and these children fan out. These, and you get, you know, other blocks that also have a bunch of children, right? So, so that's a B tree. How is a B epsilon tree different? It's actually really close. The difference is that all the internal nodes, the ones that have children, get split in half. So the first half of it is exactly like a B tree, where you fan out to all the other child nodes. And I'll say these are also internal nodes. Okay, so you get the fan out, and then you end up with the children here. So what happens with what's the file help?
What's the file?
What do you mean, what's the file?
Which one should I open?
Just hit slide plus until you see ASCII. Oh, that's going to be a problem. CHMOD plus X file, the slide plus, and then it'll work.
What?
See it, make it executable.
Okay.
So what we do here, so what do we do with the other half of the node? What we do with the other half of the node is we put messages into it. And a message in this case is basically a deferred update to the leaf. So what we can do is, for example, let's just say I want to insert I'll call it, oh, the operation is called insert. And I'll say file X to create X, right? And what I'll do is I'll put a little message here that says insert file X with these attributes. And this gets inserted into the root node of the tree and stays there. When you read from the tree, you walk down to the leaf and say, do I have an insertion for file X?
Change the name of intro 1 back to intro.
Does not have it. Then next, go up the node, does not have anything about file X. And here we have a message. So we basically reconstruct the key value pair, and we get the file. Now let's just say I want to touch the file. I don't actually need to read anything about it, because all I'm doing is updating the modification time blindly. So what I do is I create wstat, which is wstat is write stat, and it will just create a new message here without actually even reading a damn thing. It will, and we can basically toss messages into the tree like that. So this is, and then what happens when this message buffer fills up? We basically flush down to another node. So this so we get the messages kind of flowing down the tree slowly towards the leaves. Why do we want this data structure? Well, the writes become a lot cheaper because you're not actually doing, the writes become a lot cheaper for multiple reasons. The first one is that you're not actually necessarily reading any data to do the write. The second one, which is a little bit more subtle, for a file system that is crash safe, you really want to do copy on write. Now, in a classic B tree, if you do a copy on write, you're doing a copy of the root node and a copy of the child and a copy of the leaf. And now you've just done three writes to update one value, or four writes because you have to actually update the value too. With a B epsilon tree, what you do is you take a copy of the root node and you're done. You've updated the data structure. So now you end up with a lot less write amplification. ZFS uses a classic B tree, which means that they have a lot of, the B tree itself is simpler. You don't have to reconstruct values on the way up. But to make it perform well, you have to do a lot of work on how do you batch transactions and avoid a bunch of copying and write amplification. That I can just kind of go, whatever. So this is, and you might be asking yourself, well, if this is so great, why doesn't ZFS use it? And the answer is very simple. ZFS was released in 2003. B epsilon trees were described, at least became well-known-ish in 2015. So 12 years of time is the difference. Okay. So this is the key value store. And what we do for, So this gives us a lot of nice stuff. For example, if we want to take a snapshot, well, we need to keep a pointer to the old value, and we keep a pointer to the new value. And that's your snapshot. You just don't delete the old stuff. The way we do this is that GEFS is actually a tree of trees. So we have I guess I can switch to laptop from now, if it's working. OK, cool. So this should actually let me move a little bit faster. I'm going to just move this down. OK, good enough. The good enough presentation. Cool. So this is basically what we were talking about just now with the file system layer, key value layer. So write optimized variant of a B-tree is what the B-epsilon tree is. I just kind of described it. It's complex and painful to implement, but everything else, once you have it, gets simpler. So the fan out, messages, updating inserts to the message buffer. And then when the message buffer fills, we flush to the children. We apply the, so basically the messages turn into a leaf node, or into key value pairs when it reaches the leaf. And I just explained why it works really well with Cal. So here's an example of what copy on write looks like with this. You have your old tree and your new tree. Lookup is a bit of, is again a pain in the ass, because once you walk down to the leaf, you have to kind of walk back up and get a full key value pair that you can actually return to the querying layer. So you're so every read ends up doing a little bit of reconstruction. This isn't too expensive, but it is a little bit of overhead over a regular B-tree. And then listing a directory, scanning is even more complicated, but it's still fairly fast. I have limited time, so I'm going to just skip over the details of scanning. If you want to talk to me about how this works internally at any point, just feel free to grab me after this. But basically, listing a the important thing to remember is just listing a directory is a prefix scan over the keys. You look up the ID of the directory you're listing, and then you say, give me every file that starts with it. And because it's a B tree, all the keys are close together and nicely sorted. So you get really good locality. Insertion, it's similar to the rules are similar to B trees, except there's a little bit more complexity, because when you merge a node, well, in a B tree, you only have one thing to consider when you're asking, can I merge it? Do I have room for the fan out nodes? So if you've got two nodes that are combined less than half full, you can just kind of merge them. Here, you've also got the message buffers to consider. And what do you do here? Do you flush them? Do you not? What do you do? I just kind of do the lazy thing and say, if the message buffer is full, even if you could flush the tree, just don't. So there's room for optimization there. But it turns out that even with the relaxed merging, the tree nodes usually are pretty OK, and the balance isn't bad. The fill factor isn't bad. Occasionally, if you're running check on the file system, it will tell you, hey, you've got an underfull pivot. And you know, it's not perfect for performance, but it doesn't seem to be a problem. OK, so I've talked a little bit about upserts already. So I was talking, So what I do for the file for snapshots is basically, this is where I'd gotten to on the whiteboard. I have two trees, or two layers of trees. I have the snapshot tree, which is also a B-epsilon tree that points to the roots of each snapshot. So your snapshot tree points to your main snapshot, which is basically the default name that you put your data into. Your admin snapshot, which is where your user database and a couple of other file system and many things go into. And the reason this is separate, by the way, is because, well, if I have different snapshots with different user lists, who has the permissions to do what? So the user database is stored separately from all the snapshots and is used across all of them. And then your dumps, which is basically your history. Okay, so that's basically how snapshots work. And by the way, I should have said this at the start of the talk, but if you have questions at any point, feel free to stop me, and I'm happy to explain a little bit more.
Yeah, I noticed you added support for the history command for GEFS. Can you add support for the yesterday command?
Yeah, I will do that. okay, so the block layer. This is kind of the... this is where we actually put the data on disk. This is where the rubber meets the road. And basically what we do here is also try to be roughly, well, this is very ZFS inspired. So it's trying to be, but it also simplifies a lot of things. So what we do here is we take a disk and we split it into a bunch of arenas. So you have your disk, and I think we default to 8 arenas, but the number doesn't actually matter. And what the arenas, and each arena is a pool of fixed size blocks. So each block is the same size. And then if you want to grow the file system, we support that. We can, you just add more arenas to the end of your arena list. The slide plus. So what, and the way we keep track of the blocks is we just have a, in memory, we have a AVL tree. And in on disk, we have just a flat log of regions. So the regions basically say, you know, this block is allocated from here to here is free. And you know, when we want to allocate a block, well, you just append to the log and say, well, this block is allocated. So, and this block has been freed, and this block has been allocated, and this block has been freed. So as you can imagine, this ends up becoming a fairly long log of basically every operation. So every now and then, we basically take that log and compress it. So we take the, like, if you have block X that you allocate, and then you free block X later, then it just turns into one entry that records the final state of the block. And that's done by taking the AVL tree and writing out the set of ranges to disk. So the AVL tree basically maintains, you know, maintains the state of the whole disk in of the blocks in memory, which can be, as a set of ranges, and is just kind of updated in place. Okay, so. Yeah, the blocks themselves, we can have every block pointer is a tuple of three values. It's a address, the hash of the contents of the block, which is how we detect corruption, and the generation, which is used for snapshotting and space reclamation. Yeah, one list per arena, which means that, and the reason we keep one list, the reason for arenas, which I forgot to mention, is because we, when we compress the log, we basically can't do anything, and compressing the log can take time. So if we split the disk into arenas, we can do log compression in the background while we allocate from the other arenas. So this basically allows us to concurrently maintain the file system and actually use it. I should have done one other thing, but okay. So I did shorten this presentation a little bit because, well, I have limited time. I'm actually coming up on the end of it. So, okay, last thing, how is this thing tested? So we've got a fuzzer in the file system, which will generate random operations as quickly as possible and just kind of upsert and do consistency checks all the time. We've got a tester, a virtual disk that we can use to simulate block by block I/O. So you do, say, a build of Go, And then we do a replay. We start with an empty file system and then do the first block I/O operation and check, is it consistent? Then do the second one and check, is this consistent? And then do the third one and check if this is consistent. And then about 100,000 operations later, we've gone through the entire Go build and